Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So reading from Canto 10, Chapter 13, up to Text 57. Okay. This looks like it's a little too long for the Brahma Samhita. Does anybody know the meter for this? Should I try to squeeze it into a Brahma Samhita? It's not. I don't know the meter. First verse of the Bhagavatam. Start me off. Okay. Itadesse tarkye nija mahimani swap pramtike pramitike. I guess we could try it today. It's going to be kind of hard. Itadesse tarkye nija mahimani swa pramitike. Itirese tarke nija mahi mani swab pramitike. Parachrajato tan nirasana mukha brahmaka mitao. Paratra jato tan nirasana mukha brahmaka mitao. Anise pi drastum kemidam itivam muyati sati. Anise pi drastum kem idam itivam muyati sati. Chacha dajo yatva sapadi paramo ja javanikam. Chacha dajo gyatva sapadi paramo gya javanikam. Itirase tarkye nija mahimani swa pramitike. Paratrajato tan nirasana mukha brahmaka mitao. Anise pi drastum kim idam itiva muyati sati. Chacha dajo gyatva sapari paramo ja javanikam. Others?
Thank you.
Vaishnavis? Anybody? Any takers? Any other takers? Okay. Okay. E.T. Thus. Ida Ise. Lord Brahma, the Lord of Saraswati. Ida. Atarkye. Beyond. Nijamahimani. Whose own glory. Swapramitike, self-manifest and blissful. Paratra, beyond. Ajata, the material energy. Prakriti. Atat, irrelevant. Nirasanamukha, by the rejection of that which is irrelevant. Brahmaka, by the crest jewels of the Vedas. Mitao, in whom there is knowledge. Anise, not being able. Api, even. Drastum, to see. Kim, what? Idam, is this. Iti, thus. Va, or Muyati Sati, being mystified. Chachada, removed. Aja, Lord Shri Krishna. Gyatva, after understanding. Sapari, at once. Parama, the greatest of all. Aja Javanikam, the curtain of Maya. Translation and purport, and it's a long purport, 3 pages, by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Brahman is beyond mental speculation. He is self-manifest, existing in His own bliss, and He is beyond the material energy. He is known by the crest jewels of the Vedas by refutation of irrelevant knowledge. Thus, in relation to that Supreme Brahman, the personality of Godhead, whose glory has been shown by the manifestation of all the 4 armed forms of Vishnu, Lord Brahma, the Lord of Saraswati, was mystified. What is this? He thought, and then he was not even able to see. Lord Krishna, understanding Brahma's position, then at once removed the curtain of his yoga maya. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Brahma was completely mystified. He could not understand what he was seeing, and then he was not even able to see. Lord Krishna, understanding Brahma's position, then removed that yogamaya covering. In this verse, Brahma is referred to as Irisha. Ida means Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and Irisha is her husband, Lord Brahma. Brahma, therefore, is most intelligent. But even Brahma, the lord of Saraswati, was bewildered about Krishna. Although he tried, he could not understand Lord Krishna. In the beginning, the boys, the calves, and Krishna himself had been covered by yogamaya, which later displayed the second set of calves and boys, who were Krishna's expansions, and which then displayed so many four-armed forms. Now, seeing Brahma's bewilderment, Lord Krishna caused the disappearance of that yoga maya. One may think that maya, one may think that the maya taken away by Lord Krishna was Mahamaya, but Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that it was yoga maya, the potency by which Krishna is sometimes manifest and sometimes not manifest. The potency which covers the actual reality and displays something unreal is called Mahamaya. But the potency by which the absolute truth is sometimes manifest and sometimes not is Yogamaya. Therefore, in this verse, the word Aja refers to Yogamaya. Krishna's energy, his Maya Shakti or Swarup Shakti, is one. But it is manifested in varieties. Parashya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shriyate, Svetas Vatara Upanishad 6.8. The difference between Vaishnavs and Mayavadis is that Mayavadis say that this Maya is one, whereas Vaishnavas recognize its varieties. There is unity in variety. For example, in one tree there are varieties of leaves, fruits, and flowers. Varieties of energy are required for performing the varieties of activity within the creation. To give another example, in a machine, all the parts may be iron, but the machine includes varied activities. Although the whole machine is iron, one part works in one way and other parts work in other ways. One who does not know how the machine is working may say that it is all iron. Nonetheless, in spite of its being iron, the machine has different elements, all working differently to accomplish the purpose for which the machine was made. One wheel runs this way, another wheel runs that way, functioning naturally in such a way that the work of the machine goes on. Consequently, we give different names to different parts of the machine, saying, this is a wheel, this is a screw, this is a spindle, this is the lubrication, and so on. Similarly, as explained in the Vedas, Parashya Shaktir Vividhaiva Shriyate Svabhavika Jnana Balak Kriyacha. Krishna's power is variegated, and thus the same Shakti or potency works in variegated ways. Vividha means varieties. There is unity in variety. Thus Yogamaya and Mahamaya are among the varied individual parts of the same one potency. And all of these individual potencies work in their own varied ways. The Samvit, Sandini, and Aladini potencies. Krishna's potency for existence, his potency for knowledge, his potency for pleasure, are distinct from Yogamaya. Each is an individual potency. The Aladini potency is Radharani, as Srup Damodar Goswami has explained. Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikritir Haladini Shaktir Asmat. The Aladini Shakti is manifested at Radharani, but Krishna and Radharani are the same, although one is potent and the other is potency. Brahma was mystified about Krishna's opulence, Nijama Mahimani, because this opulence was atarkya, or inconceivable. With one's limited senses, one cannot argue about that which is inconceivable. Therefore, the inconceivable is called achincha. That which is beyond chincha, or our thoughts and arguments. Achincha refers to that which we cannot contemplate but have to accept. Srila Jiva Goswami has said that unless we accept achincha in the Supreme, we cannot accommodate the conception of God. This must be understood. Therefore, we say that the words of Shastra should be taken as they are, without change, since they are beyond our arguments. Achincha Kaluye Bhava Natams Tarkena Yojayat. That which is achincha cannot be ascertained by argument. People generally argue, but our process is not to argue, but to accept the Vedic knowledge as it is. When Krishna says, this is superior and this is inferior, we accept what he says. It is not that we argue. Why is this superior and that inferior? If one argues for him, the knowledge is lost. This path of acceptance is called Avaroha Panta. The word Avaroha is related to the word avatar, which means that which descends. The materialist wants to understand everything by the Aroha Panta, by argument and reason. But transcendental matters cannot be understood in this way. Rather, one must follow the Avaroha Panta, the process of descending knowledge. Therefore, one must accept the parampara system. And the best parampara is that which extends from Krishna, evam parampara praptam. What Krishna says we should accept, imam rajar shayo vidu, that is called the Avaroha Panta. Brahma, however, adopted the Aroha Panta. He wanted to understand Krishna's mystic power by his own limited conceivable power, and therefore he himself was mystified. Everyone wants to take pleasure in his own knowledge, thinking, I know something. But in the presence of Krishna, this conception cannot stand. For one cannot bring Krishna within the limitations of Prakriti. One must submit. There is no alternative. Natams tarkena yojayat. This submission marks the difference between Krishnites and Mayavadis. The phrase antan nirasana refers to the discarding of that which is irrelevant. Atat means that which is not a fact. Brahman is something described as ashtulam ananvarasvam adirgam, that which is not large and not small, not short and not long. Neti neti, it is not this, it is not that. But what is it? In describing a pencil, one may say, it is not this, it is not that. But this does not tell us what it is. This is called definition by negation. In Bhagavad Gita, Krishna also explains the soul by giving negative definitions. Najayate, mriyate va, it is not born, nor does it die. You can hardly understand more than this. But what is it? It is eternal. Ajo nicha shashvato yam parano nahanyate hanyamane shirire. It is unborn, eternal, ever-existing, undying and primeval. It is not slain when the body is slain. Bhagavad Gita 2.20. In the beginning, the soul is difficult to understand, and therefore Krishna has given negative definitions. Nainam chindanti shastrani, nainam dahati pavakaha, nachainam kledianti apo, nasosha yati maruta. The soul can never be cut into pieces by any weapon, nor can it be burned by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by wind. Krishna says it is not burned by fire. Therefore, one has to imagine what it is that is not burned by fire. This is a negative definition. So this was a big purport, and maybe this could have been even more than one day's worth of material, but anyway, we did it. So it's being I'm already spacing out. Did I say that? Okay. Which I'll relate that to a point in the class. Okay, so we're hearing here how Lord Brahma became completely mystified. So what does it mean to be mystified? So I looked up in the dictionary just to get a definition of that. Mystified means to be utterly bewildered or perplexed. It says here, when someone is confused or puzzled by something that someone else does that's very strange or impossible to explain, then they're considered, they're mystified. So Lord Brahma was completely mystified, and he was mystified because he wanted to understand Krishna's mystic power by his own limited conceivable power, and therefore he became mystified. So in other words, he completely struck out. He gave it a good shot, you know. He's the most intelligent person in the universe. He gave it his best shot, so to speak, and he completely struck out to the point where it was kind of, he was mystified. It was bewildering. It was embarrassing. He was just, Krishna was transforming the calves and the cowherd boys into Vishnu forms. And for Lord Brahma, first he could see it, and he got so confused that he didn't know what was going on. And then he couldn't even see him, it says. And then Krishna had compassion on Lord Brahma. He didn't, he was, because he could see he was so bewildered and so confused, he just decided to, he used his, withdraw the yoga maya and, you know, allow things to get back to normal. So, one lesson here is that, Lord, as I mentioned, Lord Brahma is, he's the most intelligent person in this universe. At least the most, you know, I mean, except for maybe some pure devotee who's descended here on a mission or something like that. But, I mean, generally speaking, he's the most intelligent. And his position is vastly superior to even the great demigods. Just to give an idea, you know, sometimes we go to Griffith Park to distribute books. I take a break and I walk up Mount Hollywood on the trails there. So, as I'm walking up the trails, there's some very little ants on the trail. I mean, really little. They're so little that you have to really look to see them. If you weren't really concentrating, you wouldn't even see them. And so I try to avoid them. I try not to step on them. You know, because as little as insignificant as they are, but, you know, compared to a human being, they're really little and they're really insignificant. Okay, so in comparison to Lord Brahma, even the greatest demigods are that little insignificant. Lord Brahma lives for 311 trillion, 40 billion years. Okay? So the demigods, I looked it up last night, Indra lives for about 300 million years, plus or minus, you know? So if you do the math, Lord Brahma lives for 1 million times longer than even Indra, who's the king of heaven. I mean, Indra's a pretty highly placed demigod. But just to give you an idea of, like, you know, the difference in their position, Lord Brahma lives for 1 million times the lifespan of Lord Indra. He's vastly superior to Indra, who's vastly superior to us, just like we're vastly superior to these little, teeny little ants that you practically can't even see. So, I mean, Lord Brahma, he's like, you know, he's in the big leagues. And he totally struck out, as mentioned here, by his attempt to understand Krishna, Krishna's mystic power, by his own limited conceivable power. Totally struck out. So the obvious point is, if Lord Brahma struck out, it's the same Krishna. We're not talking about a different... He couldn't... He's so vastly superior, and he totally couldn't understand Krishna by his own power. What chance do we have? It's ludicrous. It's absurd to think that we're going to be able to understand anything about Krishna by that process, by the Aroha Panta, you know, by the ascending process, using the strength of our intelligence, our mind intelligence. You know. Prabhupada says everyone wants to take pleasure in his own knowledge, thinking, I know something. But if we stop and analyze that, even, you know, very superficially, we could see it's kind of a ridiculous proposition. I mean, just like, let's take our bodies, for instance, okay? So everybody, it's easy to understand how our material body is very limited. It gets old, and when it gets older, you can't perform the same way as it performed when it was younger. Like, even the great professional athletes, they throw in the towel. They call it quits when they hit 40. Some maybe go 40, 41. Others don't even bother to try to make it that far, you know, because they know. You know, they know. Even though they might be still, you know, doing really well, performing really nicely, but they know, okay, it's just a matter of a year or two now, and I'm not going to be able to do what I was able to do. These young whippersnappers are going to be too much competition. I'm going to get hurt straining myself to, you know, maintain that same level of performance. Let me get out. So it's just like, it's a known fact that the material body can't perform to optimum capacity beyond a certain age. And then, as the drama continues, it can't perform at all sometimes. It gets sick, or even when you get a little bit older, you have to speak of optimum capacity. You're lucky if you can perform to any capacity. You see, so that's the material body, the gross material body. So what makes us think that the subtle material body, which is the mind is part of, mind, intelligence, and false ego, right? That's the subtle body, mind, intelligence, and false ego. It's also matter. It's not spirit, it's matter. So why are we so confident about the mind? you know, thinking that our mind is so powerful, it's so great, you know, that we're going to be able to understand the absolute truth. You see, I mean, we can see our it's an analogy. Our gross body has these limitations, so mind also, it is matter after all, and it has its limitations. That's a point. So, so it's really, we should completely abandon this attempt to understand the absolute truth by this ascending process, this arohapanta. And Lord Brahma himself is going to acknowledge this. We won't be reading it because I think we're gonna be stopping and starting from the first canto again in probably a week or so, because this is not, we did text 57 today, and 64 is the last text in this chapter, and then we'll probably be starting from the first canto again. But in the next chapter, chapter 14, when Lord Brahma offers prayers to Lord Krishna, one of the prayers he offers is he acknowledges this point. He says, Jnane prayasam udapashyanamanta eva jivanti san mukuritam bhavati avarta staneshtitas srutikatam tanuminobir ye prayasam ajita thais okay. Trilokyam, I'm sorry, my Sanskrit's horrible. But he's making the point that in that first line it says Jnane prayasam udapashyanamanta eva. The first thing he says is you got to take this mental speculation and just throw it out, forget about it, you know. He learned his lesson, in other words. He learned his lesson. Forget about the mental speculation as a method for understanding the absolute truth. It gets you nowhere. And what it is, and he recommends that one should hear submissively from a self-realized person. As Prabhupada mentions here in the purport, we should hear from the parampara. And that's what Lord Brahma recommends. He says that if somebody can staneshtita, they can stay in their own position. You know, it means they can continue to be a, you know, grihastha, if they're grihastha or whatever they are, you know, whatever vana or ashram you're in, just stay there. It's okay. But hear submissively from a self-realized soul. And by that process, you'll get purified. You'll understand something about Krishna. Not by the power of your own limited mind like that. Total waste of time. So, that's Lord Brahma's recommendation. And that was also acknowledged as a very important understanding by Lord Chaitanya himself in that famous conversation he had with Ramananda Roy, where, you know, they were discussing. And then at one point, Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Roy to speak about the perfection of life. You know, he asked, and Ramananda Roy was feeling very uncomfortable because he was a grihastha, he was a politician, basically. He wasn't from a Brahmin caste or anything like that. And he's, Lord Chaitanya said, no, yay Krishna tattvaveta se guru. You know the science of Krishna, you can speak, I'll listen. So he had Lord Ramananda Roy speak and about what was the ultimate perfection of life. And Ramananda Roy quoted different verses, as that's the appropriate thing to do. He didn't give his, you know, offer his own speculations. He made a statement and he immediately quoted a Sanskrit shloka to support his point. And he quoted about half a dozen different shlokas. And Lord Chaitanya said, well, yeah, but not really. I mean, could you say something more? Could you say something? He rejected his first half a dozen statements as being not external, you know, not really what he acceptable as the highest goal of life. And then Lord Brahma quoted that, Ramananda Roy quoted that verse from the prayers of Lord Brahma from this next chapter, chapter 14. And Lord Chaitanya said, yeah, okay, now you got something. That one's good, you know. And he accepted that. And then but he still asked him to go further, but that was the first thing he accepted as, valid process for understanding the absolute or the ultimate perfection of life, to do that. So, yeah, hearing in parampara, very, very important point. And I was just, and that's what Prabhupada's given us. You know, Prabhupada's given us this opportunity to hear parampara. And the benefits are, one benefit is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, text 2, famous verse, Dharma Projitikai Tavotra. But there's one phrase there in the Sanskrit goes, tapo tsayon mulanam. In other words, one of the results of hearing from parampara is that by hearing such truth, it uproots the threefold miseries. So that's the first installment or the first benefit of hearing from the parampara. You're hearing the truth, and it uproots the threefold miseries. Actually, in the next couple of weeks, we're going to be hearing a lot of verses about the importance of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, because those verses appear in the first canto, in the first chapter, in the second chapter, and sometimes devotees recite them before they give class, and so we'll be hearing those. But that's one of the first benefits, that this hearing this truth uproots the threefold miseries. Krishna says that also. Fourth chapter Bhagavad Gita, he says, he recommends the famous verse, Tadvidi Paripatena, just try to learn the truth by approaching a bona fide spiritual master, inquire from him submissively, render service unto him. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you because he has seen the truth. And the next verse, he says something about the result of doing that. He says, Yajgyat Vana Punar Mohan, Avam Yas Yasi Pandava. How's it go? Yena Bhutani Asheshani Drakshashyatmani Atomai. That the result, he says, rather than butcher the translation, I'll read it. Having obtained real knowledge from a self-realized soul, you will never fall again into such illusion. For by this knowledge you will see that all living beings are but part of the Supreme, or in other words, that they are mine. So one result of hearing from the self-realized soul is that when you hear properly, you'll never fall again into such illusion. So that's one thing. And then another thing occurred to me yesterday. I was planning on coming to the Sunday Feast Kirtan and the lecture, but I took a nap, and I wound up getting up after the kirtan was all over, but I thought, at least I'll come for the lecture. And so I came. Judah Karma was giving the lecture, and I could always count on hearing something parampara when Judah Karma speaks. He's very careful. You ask a question, he doesn't just immediately think, well, can I think of a shastric statement to support what I'm about to say, or what does the shastra have to say? That's the correct standard, shastra chakshus. So I knew I was going to hear something bona fide, so I figured, okay, let me splash some water on my face and get down there and listen. And then, so I came to the class, and I was sitting there, I was thinking to myself, you know what, wait a second, I mean, why do I keep coming to these classes? I mean, it's not like I'm going to learn something new. You know, I knew all this whole philosophy 3 weeks after I joined the movement back in 1973. No, it's like all the points, you know, as far as the actual information goes. I mean, I don't think I'm anything special by saying that. I think really kind of any person, like average intelligence, any student, college student, within a short time could learn all the information in this philosophy within a very short time. I remember when I went to college, they just throw so much stuff at you, information at you, and you're expected to study it and learn it and throw it, you know, regurgitate it back on exams. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of information. So it's not like I'm learning any new information when you come to classes and say, what's going on? Why come? Why bother coming? And then immediately this thought came to my mind, which was that, well, you know, why do people go to concerts? So, it wasn't like I wasn't thinking it. It just the thought. And I said, what do you mean? What does that have to do with what I was just thinking? But I answered the question: why do people go to concerts? Well, they enjoy it. Concerts are enjoyable. People like to go to performances of, you know, live music. Like once again, when we were distributing books up in Griffith Park, on the way up to the observatory, you know, there's a place called Greek Theater. So all throughout the summer, they have concerts there. And a lot of people come, you know. Now, why? They've heard that music before, right? And they could stay home and listen to it on the, you know, go on YouTube or something like that. But they enjoy it. See, so in the same way, as you continue in devotional service, you develop an appreciation for hearing the philosophy. It's enjoyable. It's actually enjoyable. You know, you like to hear, just like you like to hear somebody do a good job playing some music. You know, if somebody plays some music that you enjoy and they do it a good job, you enjoy it. So in the same way, devotees enjoy hearing the philosophy presented correctly and nicely. And it's like, in the Bhagavad Gita, in 10th chapter, Krishna says, it's one of the four most important verses. He says, Machchita matgata prana burayantas parashparam katayantas chamam nicham tashyanti charamanti cha. That the thoughts of my pure devotees dwell in me, their lives are surrendered unto me, and they derive great satisfaction and bliss enlightening one another and conversing about me. So Bhagavatam class could fit into that category. You know, it's devotees enlightening one another and conversing about Krishna. That's what's going on. And also in the Bhagavatam, this is further confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when I think it's the sages of Namasharanya speaking to Suta Goswami, and they say, they're hearing from him for a while, and then when they get their chance to speak, back and forth. So they say, Vayam tu na vitrip yama, yat uttama shloka vikraname, yat shunvatam rasa gyanam, swadu swadu pade pade. They say to Suta Goswami, we never tire of hearing your ambrosial words, the nectar coming from your mouth like that. It's becoming more and more relishable to hear you speak. And swadu swadu pade, it's becoming sweeter and sweeter. Pade pade means step by step or moment by moment. So this is what, if you're not already experiencing this, probably, I'm sure you're not experiencing it this morning, I apologize, but if you're not already experiencing this in general, stay tuned to this station, because as you get purified, just by this exact process of hearing the Bhagavatam, chanting, and the whole engaging in devotional service, then it becomes more and more relishable. Actually, I had this, I think I mentioned this in a previous class when I went to Mayapur. I was there for the month of February, and I had that experience. Mostly it was just by Krishna's arrangement. The time change is such that whenever I go to India, I wind up getting up at like 12:30 or 1:00. I can't help it because of the jet lag. It's not that all of a sudden I'm becoming one of the six Goswamis or something. The jet lag just affects me like that, and I get up at 12:30, 1:00, 1:15, and I just realize, I can't sleep anymore, so I just stay up and I start chanting, and I have all my rounds chanted before Mangalarti, and then I'll chant some more rounds. So anyway, when the class came, I was kind of, I've had all my rounds chanted, read a little bit, talked to some devotees, and I really was, each class I was feeling like, I was feeling like, wow, this was the best class I ever heard. This was an amazing class. And then the next morning, I thought, wait a second. No, this is the best class I've. And each morning was get like that. Went on like that about seven days in a row, sort of thing. So that's what, it can be like that. It was, not always like that for me, but I did experience that. So, yeah. So that's the way to go. Not the, forget about this using our own limited power to understand anything about Krishna. Just try to. It's an effort, it's an ongoing, it's a process, it's an ongoing endeavor, but we have to regularly, continuously try to put aside the mental speculation and just try to take shelter of knowledge that's coming to us in the cyclic succession, parampara. That's the way to go. And Gyane Prayasam Uda Pashyana Manta Eva, just take that mental speculation and just throw it far away. Shastra Chakshus, that's one of the first things you learn when you're as a devotee coming to move, to try to become Shastra Chakshus, means seeing through the eyes of the scripture. So initially it's just it might seem like, okay, well, this is what you got to do, and you just do it as a discipline. But if we stick to that, if we commit to that process, we'll get purified, and then it'll be more than just a discipline. We'll actually start experiencing the higher taste as a result of connecting with this superior perfect knowledge. So I'll stop there. I had a long I don't think I said a lot, but I looks like I'm out of time. But maybe somebody has a question or a comment. Yeah, Gauranga Prem Prabhu. Yeah. Yeah.
And if she's covered by the yoga maya, then he is in discouragement. That is the original position, right? So here.
Either way, you're in maya. Yeah. How come what? Well, he wasn't in such bad shape. He was kind of like a good kind of bewildered. I mean, he was being bewildered by Krishna's yoga maya, so he wasn't really in that much trouble. You know, it wasn't like he was bewildered like a conditioned soul. But Krishna still felt that it was, you know, an uncomfortable situation for him, so he just went from one type of yoga maya to another type of yoga maya, let's say. He wasn't... You know, he wasn't in an illusion like a conditioned soul. It wasn't, somebody might want to help me out with that. It wasn't a negative experience for him on the whole. You know, he had a vision, but that vision apparently proved to be a little bit too much for his, you know, to assimilate, so Krishna could understand that, and he just kind of reduce the strangeness for him. Different aspect of yoga maya. Yeah. Other? Somebody want to elaborate? Archer, do you want to elaborate upon that? And okay. Is it? Good. Devotees in yoga maya also become bewildered.
Yeah, that's obvious. There are different kinds of bewilderment. There's a very interesting case in the Navadvipa Mahatmya that Bhaktivinoda Thakur relates, that when the Pandavas went out to conquer in all directions before the Rajasuya sacrifice, they had to do that. So Bhimasen, he came across this king Samudrasen in the Bengal area, who was a great devotee of Krishna. But he didn't feel like surrendering to the Pandavas. He wanted to fight. So they fought. And he had Bhima in a lot of trouble. Actually, it was defeating him. But Krishna didn't want that. He wanted the Pandavas to be victorious. So Krishna, all of a sudden, from Bhima's perspective, he saw that this Samudrasen got down off his chariot and, like he was surrendering, fell on the ground. So Bhima didn't see, but Krishna appeared to Samudrasena, and being a devotee, you see Krishna face to face all of a sudden, he got off his chariot and paid obeisances. So Krishna can act any way he wants. As it's stated in today's purport, one of the features of yoga maya is to make Krishna manifest or not manifest to the devotee.
That's it. Right.
That's stated in today's purport.
Yeah, that was in the
So Krishna, by his own volition, by his own will, by his own desire, even though elsewhere it states that the pure devotees always see Krishna at every moment. So that seems like a contradiction. If you're seeing Krishna at every moment, how can you not see Krishna? Like in Bhima's case. He didn't see that Krishna was on the battlefield to save him. He didn't see that. Yet it's stated that the devotees see Krishna at every moment. That's what makes them pure devotees. So these are these things that inconceivable. That's why it's also stated in today's purport. You have to accept that achintya. If you don't accept that achintya, inconceivability part of Krishna and his Leela and everything, then you'll never understand. So some aspects of this philosophy always remain achintya, inconceivable. But in this particular case, with Lord Brahma, just because it's stated that he was being controlled by yoga maya, not mahamaya, doesn't mean that necessarily he's in his original position in the spiritual world. No, you're making an assumption that's not stated. It's not stated anywhere that just because he was on the yoga maya at this point, that means he's now in his original position. That's not stated anywhere.
Okay, anyway, I think we can stop there. It's 8:25. Thank you. Grantarad Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.